It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Sit down for the most unique dinner date you've ever experienced. Because the dinner conversation is about to get testy with Bob. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Changed. I need to update you on some things. First of all, it's Monday, October the 5th, not September 28th, as was on the original lineup. Secondly, the co-host is Ken Reed, not Arash Madani, as it was on the original lineup.
You must be pumped.
Yeah, I can't tell you how thrilled I am. So there he is right there in his green tie. It doesn't go with anything, but it's all right. And to my right, he needs no introduction. He's the television voice of the Toronto Blue Jays. The longtime catcher, Buck Martinez, is in studio.
Good afternoon.
How delightful to see you.
Oh, it's nice to be here.
How's your golf game, by the way?
It's really non-existent right now.
Yeah.
A little bit busy.
Yeah.
We'll take time.
Yeah, you get some time in the wintertime to play
absolutely.
A bit.
Buck drove into me this summer. He was behind me. He can launch it right at my heels.
Yeah, but that's because his drive only went 220. I wouldn't have done that if he'd hit it normally.
If you'd known it was only going to go 220, you probably would have hit 7-iron off the tee.
It was a par 3, Buck. Come on.
We were just chatting briefly about this, the start times, either 3:37 or 4:07 for Thursday's game and then 12:45 for Friday's game. And there are people in their cars now who haven't heard this news. So that is the story. So you better get ready to take time off work on Thursday and Friday if you got tickets. You don't think that's a big factor, though?
No, I don't think so. Toronto, of course, is a big downtown market, and the people need an excuse to have the rest of the day off. They'll go to the ballpark. I think it's going to be a great atmosphere. Obviously, it's been a long time since we've had a game like this here, and the fans are pretty pumped.
What does Texas mean as the opposition?
They're hot. They're scoring a lot of runs. Adrian Beltre's driven in 38 runs since the 1st of September, which is the franchise record. We didn't see Cole Hamels when they last played him.
Yep.
They're hot. And Beltre's thumb appears to be a little bit better than it was when the Blue Jays faced him, because he tore up his thumb and he wasn't swinging the bat very well. But they've got some experience in the postseason as well. Elvis Andrus has been through this before. Mm-hmm. Prince Fielder's been through it before. And Cole Hamels, of course, a big winner in the postseason for the Phillies. So they've got some experience.
Do you see this as a turnaround for the Texas Rangers, who missed badly last year? Or was last year kind of a blip on the radar? I know there's lots of changes.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we have to remember is that they haven't had Yu Darvish all year.
That's right.
And everybody forgets about that. I mean, they would have been a odds-on favorite to win had they had Darvish the whole year. But they went out and got Cole Hamels, which replaces Darvish's presence in the postseason. But it's a good team. And I think as far as making up for last year, you know, they dealt with some devastating injuries like everybody else has, and it's just been a great season for them, and they're playing very well right now.
Did it make beating Kansas City for the American League championship even more important? I know we talk about seventh game of an ALCS, but having that, the ability to get the wild card team and maybe miss the ace pitcher on the opening game, those are factors. Is this maybe the worst matchup for the Blue Jays?
Texas?
Yeah.
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I think this is a very favorable matchup for the Blue Jays, because once you get past their starters, their bullpen is not very good, and they've been pitching a lot. Of course, Sean Tolleson pitched 5 straight days up until Sunday, and Cole Hamels gave him a complete game. But I think this is probably the best matchup
really
for the Blue Jays, yes. I think the bullpen is subject to giving up a lot of runs. And when Colby Lewis pitched well against the Blue Jays earlier in the season, the bullpen gave up 10 runs after he left the game. He had the lead, and the only 2 games they lost, Gallardo shut him out both times, and Gallardo was very tough on him. And, you know, I think now they have a little bit better idea about Giovanni Gallardo, a National Leaguer, of course, but he pitches like Tanaka. He works to the corners, and he doesn't throw too many pitches over the plate. But the Blue Jays have some weapons now they didn't have for the entire season, of course.
That's I was going to ask you about Gallardo, and my old man came up for a series earlier this year. He said, I want to see these Jays pound the ball, and we went to the Gallardo game where he shot them out. But I think that's a very important point that you just made. There's a lot of different guys on this roster now. When you look at those Gallardo numbers against the Jays, I think it was scoreless in 13 and two-thirds, but that was a different Jays team he was
sure
facing.
Was. Yeah, and you know what? He doesn't get the credit he deserves, but Ben Revere has gotten a boatload of hits since he's come over here.
Wow, and especially after the first 2 weeks where he hit nothing.
First 2 weeks, we're all looking at each other going, this guy led the National League in hits?
Yeah.
And then to his credit, he ended up with 181 hits this year. That's just three fewer than he had last year when he led the league.
I saw an interview he did a couple days ago with Barry, and you can tell me more about this and educate me about this. He mentioned his hands. Getting his hands out or getting his hands down.
Keeping his hands close to the
body.
And
getting that other, bringing left field into that. Can you just elaborate on that for me?
Rod Carew was his mentor in Minnesota. And you don't need
to say.
He
could hit a bit.
You don't need to say anything more about that. But Carew told Revere early on, you're a little guy. Don't try to be a big guy. Know where the barrel of the bat is. Take the barrel of the bat to the ball no matter where it is. And Ben hits high fastballs as good as anybody on his team. But you're right. The first couple of weeks, Pat and I would look at each other and go, wow, this guy's got a pretty weak stroke.
Yeah.
I mean, he was barely getting to the infielders, not out of the infield, but to the infielders. And then to his credit, it started to come around. I think any time a player goes to a new team, especially from last place to first place, you have a tendency to want to show that you fit. But boy, does he fit now. He's getting hits like just about every time he comes to the plate, it seems.
Well, the other thing that kind of throws you too is he's non-traditional in terms of his style. He doesn't have a classically good swing.
Right. Got a lot of movement. Yeah.
He's moving all over the place.
It's a little bit like Ty Cobb, if you will. The hands are going up, the feet's going up, and everything's going there. But the key is he gets his foot down and the barrel gets to the ball out in front.
Yeah, it wasn't for the first little while. And I mean, I'd love to see what he's hit since the first couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. It's been like
350. 350. Yeah.
And you know what? I think he had... You know, the last time I looked, it was about 71 hits since he came to the Jays in about 55 games.
Yeah,
we had the big debate here on Friday who would we put in on the roster for the Jays.
Yeah.
When it came down to the bullpen, everybody screamed, Aaron Loop, no. But looking at this Texas lineup, the success he's had against lefties, the fact that Burley is not going to be on this roster for this division series, I'm thinking it might be Aaron Loop, yes?
Yes, I think you're right, Ken. I think that's probably what they're going to do. And you know, even and Loopy's got the ability to get lefties out. We have seen that. He's gone through a tough season. He's made some adjustments and some ill-advised adjustments, and now he's back to where he should be, getting that sweeping breaking ball down and away. I would take him just to have two lefties when you have Fielder and Chu and Hamilton and all the lefties that you have to deal with on that team. He's an important presence. If indeed it makes them hesitate, you know, maybe they're going to make a move. You got Loop here. You can bring Loop in the sixth, get a couple guys out, then you bring the core of right-handers in, and you still have Cecil for the seventh and eighth. I think, you know, Cecil's been unbelievable. But to have two left-handers against that lineup, I think that's probably the way they're going.
Do you know if Cecil and Loop have talked about their seasons at all? Because Cecil was struggling at the start, and then all of a sudden he's been
unhittable. Well, he was
unhittable.
The closer and then couldn't hold
the
job.
Well, he made some adjustments in his delivery. Yeah. He was tipping off some pitches, and he covered that up, and he made an adjustment. He went to Sanchez and talked to Sanchez about his sinker. And that's been a key pitch for him. If you watch early in the game, when he comes in, if he knows there's a hard charging hitter up there, he'll throw that two-seamer on the first pitch and take it off the barrel. And then he's got the ability to throw a curveball for a strike and bury a curveball for a strikeout in the dirt. He's made a dramatic adjustment in the things he can do with the baseball right now. Plus, he's pitching with the ultimate confidence.
Yeah.
18 months ago, this was a guy, Brett Cecil, who couldn't get to 90 on the gun. Couldn't get to 90,
right.
88, 89 with the best he had. Now, when he was a starter, when he first came up, he was 92. He's around what he was now. He's, you know, low 90s.
Yeah.
Not a hard thrower, but, you know, he had some pop.
Respectable.
Mm-hmm. Respectable. And then he lost that.
Yeah.
That has come back. Have you talked to him or talked to anybody about how he rediscovered those extra 2, 3, 4 miles an hour?
Absolutely. It's all mechanical.
It is, huh?
Yes. And so much about pitching and hitting, for that matter, is about rhythm and mechanics and that timing and how things come together. You know, you can't fight against your body, and he wasn't getting the turn he needed, and he wasn't getting his hands on top. But now he gets his hands in a good position to start with, and there's not a lot of movement, so he always stays on top of the baseball. And then he gets that explosiveness. He's throwing 96 now. He threw some 96 fastballs in Tampa Bay the other day, and just not often, but just enough to put a little pause in the hitter's mind. Go, whoa, I haven't seen that before. So now it sets up everything else.
So let me talk to you about another guy who's gone a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the year, Osuna was 97 regularly. Now he's rarely there and more often 93, 94. Fatigue? What's happened there?
I think what's happened is he's sensing. He told me this the other day in Tampa Bay. He says, you know, I think the hitters are looking for my fastball now. I said, well, yeah, that's what your best pitch is. Of course they're going to look for it. And I think he tried to make up for the perceived loss of velocity. In doing that, he got mechanical and started to rotate around his body a little bit, and that took him out of his good mechanics. When you pitch, you have to land against your front foot, and that gives you the leverage to uncork the throw. He was rotating it around, and his shoulders were taking, like a golfer.
Mm-hmm.
When you rotate on the golf course, you're going to lose the head speed, the club head speed. So you have to stay firm, and then you drive through your delivery. And I think he perceived that he had lost some velocity, so he was trying to manufacture velocity, and that hurt him even more. I don't think there's anything. He's tired. Of course he's tired. Everybody's tired this time of the year. He's thrown 69 innings in his rookie season after Tommy John.
Yeah, that's a lot.
He's worked a lot. But I think this break will give him enough time to recuperate, re-energize. The one thing that people don't understand, and we get to see him every day, is this is a very, very bright young man. He's 20 years old.
Yeah, that's scary.
He can see things that people don't see.
Yeah, he's 20 going on 40.
Yeah, he can see when a guy's getting on his fastball, and he's developed a slider. He's developed a slider in the major leagues as a 20-year-old, and now he's got a swing and a miss slider. So, yeah, there are people around baseball who think he should go back to being a starter.
It's funny because when you see Stroman come up, and I sort of forgot what he was, you know.
You know,
and what he had.
Let me say something about that. I think a lot of people forgot what he was.
Yeah.
And they just assume, well, you know, he hasn't pitched all year. We should put him in the pen. He's not that. He doesn't have that many innings under belt. He is a special guy.
Oh God, yeah.
He can spin the ball better than anybody I've ever seen. And you talk to Russell Martin, and his first words out of his mouth: Pedro Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
He said he's got the same it as Pedro Martinez.
When you see a guy who can make his fastball move in and out of the strike zone wherever he wants it, you realize the effectiveness of just being able to make that fastball move. And then if you throw it 97, 98, 150, but it's flat, eventually they'll figure out the timing and catch up with it. Is that something Osuna has to work on?
No.
You think he's got enough movement on the fastball?
Yes, he's going to be fine. And I think in a setup closer role, the closer role that he's in right now, you don't need that much. I mean, just think about Mariano Rivera. He threw one pitch and it moved about 4 inches and he was very successful. And everybody was aware of that. Well, now Osuna has 3 pitches. He can throw a fastball both sides of the plate. He can throw it up and down. He can throw it in and out. And now he's got a slider and a great changeup. So he's got enough weapons. I think the thing that separates him from most young pitchers, he's very efficient. When he was on that great roll, he would throw 9-10 pitches an inning. And I remember one save he picked up where he entered the game through 3 straight balls and then struck out the side on 12 pitches. That's the kind of confidence he has.
We all know that David Price is going to start game one.
Yep.
My question is, when it comes to game two, you got Marcus Stroman, who we just said is so hot, but you have R.A. Dickey, who's had so much success at home this year.
Right.
What would you do for game two, Buck?
I'd start Stroman.
Really?
Yeah. You have a chance to go up 2-0. You have a chance to be even if Price happens to get beat. See, that's the one thing people don't forget about. What happens if Price gets beat? Well, then you've got Stroman. And Stroman, he won't succumb to the pressure. He doesn't even know where he's pitching. He just loves to compete. It doesn't make any difference. But I talked to John a lot about this, and we went back and forth about, you know, Dickey's got great numbers at home and all of that. Well, the Rangers haven't seen Marco Estrada real good. They haven't seen the finished product that we saw at the end of the season with the cutter, the high fastball, the changeup, the curveball that's become so effective. So I think you'll probably end up seeing Estrada in 3, Stroman in 2, and Dickey in 4.
Really?
Wow. You trust Dickey outside? I guess in Texas it's pretty hot, so.
He knows Texas. He grew up there. That's where he learned the knuckleball.
Done and done.
I'll defer to you.
Okay.
But I would.
Well, we can argue.
I'd guess. Well, it's not an argument.
Bob likes to.
I think Dickie goes game two for me.
Yeah.
Because I like him better at home. I like him in the controlled environment.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of Stroman pitching in game three after Dickie. I like the chances of a hard thrower, and Stroman is that, mm-hmm. after the knuckleballer.
Mm-hmm.
I want to put the fear of God into those hitters, and Dickie can do that. And that's why I go that route. But it leaves Estrada kind of on the outside looking in, and I know that that is both unfair and in many ways unwise, because this guy arguably has been as good as Price has been.
Led the league in opponent's batting average, and he was, what, fourth or fifth in ERA?
I get it.
And threw 180 innings. It wasn't an accident, and he didn't make a start until the 5th of May.
I get it.
He has been good. Everybody wants this. I'm the same way. I'm going up there, well, this guy's not going to be able to get anybody out. And then you look, 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, no walks. He's been incredible.
Why? Why has he been able
because to do it? Because of his confidence in his catcher. Deonner Navarro has incorporated things that nobody ever tried to do with him before. Everybody always told him, get the ball down. Well, the high fastball is a great pitch for him. It's 89 miles an hour. It's a lot like Scott McGregor. It's not that much unlike Pat Henkin. Henkin won a Cy Young pitching upstairs at 89 to 91. And it's the same kind of phenomenon. It's like they don't really see it up there. They're looking down for that changeup, and boop. And then he's incorporated this cutter that's the same effect. You look down, cutter. Oh, it's in here. And it's just enough to take it off the barrel of the bat. And then Navarro, if you watch Navarro call a game, it's like a maestro, like a conductor up there in front of the big orchestra. He's going, throw this one, throw that one, throw this one, throw that one. He never hesitates. And Marco never pauses.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
No, he doesn't call him off very often.
He doesn't shake him off.
No.
He told me, Marco's told me several times, it's the best two catchers you ever thrown to.
Well, I think it was Arash who originally, I'm sure Arash wasn't the first one to come with it, but I know he tweeted it out one day. The best trade the Jays didn't make was the Navarro deal, because we just sat around here at the start
of
the season.
Isn't that true?
Just screaming and yelling and waiting for this deal.
I said it.
Yeah? I mean.
I said it. I said, I don't think Navarro will be satisfied after his great year last year. He had a career season.
Why would he be? You wouldn't expect him to.
But you know what really happened? And to his credit, he's a real pro. To his credit, he said, I'll tell you, I'd really like to play every day, and that's the last time I'm going to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I will do my role. And he and Russell were teammates.
Russell bumped him out of a previous job.
Russell came up from the minors when Deonner got hit by a foul tip. Russell got red hot, and they traded Navarro. That was with the Dodgers. So they know each other for a long time. And to see them work every day, they're out kicking a soccer ball around. And, you know, everybody makes light of that. But you know what? There's a lot of baseball being talked about, too, during that time. And they're out there kicking the ball around, getting loose. And then as they come back in, you know, what do you think about tonight? I try this. Navarro's throwing has improved dramatically because of soccer and the presence of Russell Martin.
Has Russell become a better catcher because of the presence of Deonner Navarro, though?
I think Russell's gotten better and better over the years. Because he picked up a lot from Yadi Molina. He watched Yadi in St. Louis, and that tilted, that angled mm-hmm. setup that he has comes from Molina. And he said, I learned a lot from Molina. And how many times have we seen Russell move before he catches the ball? And he's thrown out guys, and I said, whoa, there's no chance. Oh, he threw him out. I mean, he's had a great season. The Blue Jays went from 28th in the majors last year, catching base runners, to first.
Yeah.
Dramatic improvement.
It's been suggested that Martin may not have been happy the last couple of weeks with the amount of time that he got to play. Do you believe that to
be
true?
I never heard that.
Never heard it?
No.
Okay. Second point, and I know this is looking ahead, given the success of these two catchers, if you're the Toronto Blue Jays, will you try and re-sign Navarro?
I would try to re-sign him. Yep. He's a good teammate. A lot of the guys really look up to him for pitch selection, for patterns pitchers are giving him. Pilar and Goins have told me time and time again, they go to Navarro and talk to him a lot. And I would sign him. I would keep him back in. You know what? We have talked about this and how dramatically the team turned around when the chemistry changed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's part of that chemistry. He's the guy that sits on the bench and he'll point things out to all of the hitters. And he's a terrific teammate. And, yeah, you know what? He gets big hits, too. I mean, he gets big hits.
He didn't hit as well as he did when he was playing every day,
he missed a big chunk of the season because of the hamstring.
That's right.
About 5 weeks of the season, and his legs are very important to his hitting. And they just didn't have that good foundation on him, but he's gotten some big hits.
You have to assume, not to dwell on this, but you'd have to assume, Buck, that Navarro's primary interest would be a number one job or an opportunity for a number one job. He more or less stated that at the end of the year after they got Martin. Yeah. I don't suspect it's any different. Is there a team out there that would give him that opportunity?
Oh, I'm sure there are.
You
especially
do?
If, you know, now that the Blue Jays are in the postseason, everybody looks at postseason teams and sees the guys that aren't going to fit next year. Maybe Estrada, he's going to get a big contract because he's a free agent. We look at the Blue Jays, and that's what everybody in baseball does. You look at the good teams, you say, who is not going to stay with that team next year, and I'm going to make a run at them.
Yeah.
You know, if they sign Price, then Estrada's available. If they you know, Russell's there for 4 years. They don't have any catchers pushing Navarro.
If you were the manager.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. Did that.
Yeah, yeah, we
it's
all
a way
know.
Easier gig,
I
isn't
love
it?
What I'm doing now.
Yeah. Would you have handled the starting rotation in the last week the same way that Gibby did?
I don't know. I certainly talked to him a lot about it, about why he was doing it. And, you know, the one thing that people think that the managers and coaches and front office and players just sit around and make arbitrary decisions about, well, the cavalierly say, it's okay, don't start. But you know what? David had some tough outings. He had a 5-inning outing against the Yankees. He had another 5-inning outing against Texas. Some of those real stressful innings. And when he threw 220 innings again this year, he's been to the postseason several times in the last few seasons. Those extra innings take you into October and sometimes even into November. So I'm sure this wasn't decided without a sit down with David Price. How you feeling? And Price himself said, you know, they wanted me to have an opportunity to improve my chances for a Cy Young Award, but that's not important to me. Mm-hmm. He said, I want to get to the point where I am primed and ready for that postseason start on Thursday. Now, I saw him throw the simulated game to Tulowitzki. He's not hurt. He's not tired. He was under the weather. He had a fever in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And the Blue Jays have been sick. They've been carrying around this virus for a while. But he looked great. And he'll have another tune-up probably tomorrow. And then he'll go get him. But I tell you what, I talked to Jim Hickey during the Tampa Bay series, and he's the pitching coach that Price came up with. And I said, what is it about David Price? He said, we had David Price in 2008. He went to the World Series, and he pitched in relief. He won a game, saved a game. We told him, David, you're not going to be a successful pitcher until you learn how to throw a changeup and a curveball. Over the winter, he taught himself a changeup and a curveball. So now he's taken it a bit further. So he sinks the ball. He throws an 85-mile-an-hour changeup. He cuts the ball. He can throw the big breaking ball. He can do just about anything he wants to do on the mound. And if you watch him, he's very deliberate. I mean, he's the anti-Burley for sure. But everything is thought out. Okay, that guy did this. Now I'm going to make this pitch, and I'm going to throw backdoor. His backdoor cutter is as wicked as any pitch in the game.
Oh, I sometimes am surprised why he doesn't throw it all the time, because I don't know. Yeah.
You know, you see it way out there, and then all of a sudden it's on the corner, and you go, oop, I better swing, and it's too late.
Too late.
Yeah. You know, I want to say one thing about his numbers against Texas. Everybody's saying, yeah, well, he's 0-3 against Texas. He's 1-5 in the postseason. In 2013, he pitched complete game against Texas in a play-in game, game 163 in Texas. He went down there and had to win the game, and he did it. So, you know, I believe he pitched 7 innings, 5 runs, 5 hits, 2 runs, and they won, and guarantee their spot in the postseason. But he's pitched well against them in the past, and he's a different pitcher than he was earlier in his career.
Well, I asked you about the decision to give not just Price extra days, but Stroman extra days.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense of what you said is you probably wouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume it's because you have a stronger belief, as I do, on guys pitching. Pitchers are creatures of habit. Let them go out there every fifth day. If it has to be every sixth day, just do that. You don't necessarily have to throw 100 pitches, but just put them on the mound and put them in the rotation on their regular day. Am I wrong in reading that?
No, but I tell you, I had the same doubts too. So I got on the phone and called Jack Morris.
Okay.
And Jack Morris has a little bit of experience with this. He's pitched in the postseason. He's been a workhorse. He's been an ace. He has, you know, logged 35 starts in a season. I said, Jack, what do you think about 11 days? He goes, whoa, that's a long time. But he's a totally different personality than I am in reference to David Price. He said, I was tightly wrapped. I was as intense as anybody, and I always felt if I had extra rest, I'd be overhyped. He said, I wouldn't be good. He said, I wanted to keep right on my regular routine. He said, but I think David Price is a different cat. He said, I think he's very meticulous about his program. You know, he comes out on the field 45 minutes before he starts. He's very well programmed. So I think he understands his body. He knows what it's going to take to get him ready. And Jack agreed. You know, David Price knows himself, and he knows what he's going to do. He's been in the postseason before. So if it's, you know, his decision to do this, it's probably the right thing. And, you know, a lot of wear and tear.
Yeah, I'll buy all that. Yep. The Stroman one, I think, you know, I can make the argument, you know, Stroman is probably, at least outwardly, appears to be more like Jack Morris than David Price.
Yes. But that being said, how did he do in his first game against the Yankees when he came back having not pitched at all season long? He no-hit him for four innings.
Well, he's fine. He's been more or less perfect in all four starts. So
yeah. I think he's going to be fine, too. And you know what? Sure. You know what? This is the absolute beauty of baseball. You can have Bobby Cox, Tony La Russa, Whitey Herzog, Casey Stengel, everybody sitting around a table, and they would justify every move they mm-hmm. made in 180 degrees difference.
Would you have put Mark Burley in the bullpen for this series?
No.
No?
He can't get left-handers on.
Yeah.
He's better against righties. No. And you know what? Mark doesn't deserve to pitch out of the bullpen. He knows that. I mean, this is one of the best pitchers we've seen in the last decade and a half. And to win 15 games year in and year out is incredible. I mean, 14, 15 games every year. Never miss a start. Kevin Cash called him the most valuable pitcher in the American League because you know what you're going to get every night.
Riddle me this one. I've been screamed at for suggesting this, so I'm not going to suggest it. I'm just going to ask it because I don't want to get screamed at. Given the way that the game is now and 200 innings is a major accomplishment mm-hmm. and wins don't pile up the way they used to, would Mark Burley be a Hall of Fame candidate, in your opinion, given his consistency over the years?
I think the standard has changed mm-hmm. because of what you said. And I think he's certainly going to get strong consideration. He's pitched in a World Series. He's won four Gold Gloves. He's been an All-Star five times. He's one of six guys that has pitched multiple no-hitters, one being a perfect game. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And in his no-hitter against Texas, he walked one guy, Sammy Sosa, and picked him off first. So we'll call that a perfect game, too.
Yeah, why not?
And you know what? And then, you know, obviously the Hall of Fame is about character and about contribution and everything else, and Mark Burley is the top of the list and all that, what he does for his teammates.
See, I just think the comparables to past generations a great point. Are a lot different now.
That's a very good point because – and Bob McClure told me, if we're going to pitch, Bob McClure is the pitching coach for the Phillies and longtime major leaguer himself. He said, if we're going to use 100 pitches, let's use a four-man rotation. Mm-hmm. If they're only going to throw 100 pitches, let's start them 40 times.
I'm with him.
How about that? That's pretty good.
Well, Nolan Ryan had the same philosophy for a period of time, and they even contemplated doing it down in Texas.
I'm writing a book, and it's been a tremendous experience. And it's about how you build a perfect organization. And I have talked to 50 people, from Cox to Schuerholz and Buzzy Keller, who ran the academy and everything else. And I think what baseball has to do is you have to develop a football mentality in your organization. Start from the ground up. It might take you 5 years to get it in place. But once you get it in place, you'll have a factory, and you won't have to go to free agency every year. You will have guys coming up every year. When you get to the sixth year and you have a guy that's been good for 6 years, thank you very much. We really appreciate what you've done. Now go make your millions.
Yeah.
But it's a factory, and the Kansas City Royals Academy was that. And it was the only thing that was flawed in its approach was they didn't take drafted players. They signed non-drafted athletes that could run, that were athletic, and not necessarily baseball players, but had good eyesight. And it lasted for 4 years because of economics, but they got 14 major leaguers out of that.
Sounds kind of like what Tampa Bay does, too, with drafting guys and saying, hey, so long.
But nobody has taken it to that stage where you have three coaches at every level, pay them good money, five-year contracts, no promotions, you're not going anywhere. You got 18-year-olds, you got 19-year-olds, you got 20-year-olds, and you're going to teach a graduated method of baseball.
Interesting.
And when they step to the big leagues, Branch Rickey had the same idea.
Yeah, he did.
Can I ask one more question?
Five or six decades ago. Quick, yeah.
One more. We haven't talked about you as the play-by-play guy. You're very emotional. You get into it. You as the play-by-play guy, on a personal level, what has Kevin Pillar meant to you this year? Because, man, oh, man, are those fun to watch and listen to.
I like good players. I love good players. And he never, ever sells anybody short. When he steps on the field, he's going to give you everything he has every single day. And, you know, I get excited. I'm a fan. I know these guys on a personal level. I watch them play. You know, I grew up watching Willie Mays, and he was my idol. And when I see Kevin Pillar make some of those catches, because, you know, sitting up there, it's hard to get a perspective of whether or not they're going to catch it, first of all. And you're kind of following the ball, and you're watching the player. And then when he catches it, I get excited.
Yeah.
And when he doesn't, I get surprised.
Yeah. You might be running
out
of adjectives.
We're all the same, I think.
You might be out of adjectives with Pillar, though. I mean, man.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, you know, I'm not an English major, that's for sure.
Get this thesaurus out. Get the thesaurus.
Since you brought it up, when's the book coming out? Are you still working on it?
Yeah. Next spring.
Nice.
Good for you.
Speaking from experience, this is a great platform to plug a book on. So, you know.
Oh, I'll be back.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be back.
We'll have you back, too.
Thank you.
Thanks, pal, for stopping by.
It's been
always
great
to see you.
And good to talk baseball on a Monday night when nothing's going on, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, tomorrow night something will be going on. Wednesday night something will be going on. And Thursday afternoon something big will be going on.
That's great.
Buck Martinez, the voice of the Blue Jays. Joe Theismann joins us next. It's primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour, primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. Bob McCowan, Ken Reed in our Toronto studios. Here's the former quarterback of the Toronto Argonauts, among others, NFL insider and quarterback great. Here's Joe Theismann. Mr. Theismann, how are you?
Guys, how are you?
We're doing great.
Excellent.
I don't want to start this on a downer, but I wanted to acknowledge something. You and I lost a very close friend earlier this year when Dick Thornton passed away. I thought I'd just give you a second at the beginning of the conversation to just kind of reflect for a minute on what kind of a guy he was. You played with him for 3 years here with the Toronto Argonauts, and I know you and Tricky stayed in touch.
Oh, yeah. Dick and I'd call him when he was, as he traveled around the world for Coca-Cola, whether it was Hong Kong, whether it was Guam, where he wound up living. You know, Dick was, I think when I looked at the Toronto Argonauts of 1971, 72, 73, you know, it all started with Leo. Leo was a tremendous character, a tremendous personality in the CFL, and I think for many years, really was the heart and soul of why the CFL was able to succeed to the level it did. But he put a team together of what I call characters with character. And Tricky was probably one of the ultimate characters that we had. Dick had that raspy voice. He smoked a ton. And had a love for life. And you know, even the years had gone by, we would talk about, you know, what he's doing and where he's traveling to and the way he enjoyed life around the world. He truly was a world traveler, but a really special guy. And I guess, you know, one of the great travesties of that game in Vancouver, the Grey Cup game, was that Dick had a shot at being the MVP. Because he intercepted that crucial pass at the end that, you know, probably would have given us a chance had we won, a chance to win the football game. And he would tell me all the time as he ran down the field, he kept his eye on that car. And he just felt it when he went out of bounds about the 3-yard line. He said, He kept looking at the car. And then all of a sudden, Leon fumbled the ball. He said, I just felt the car keys fall out of my hand.
Well, I said we all did. I can tell you, Joe, I spent 40 years telling him that if he had any talent at all, he would have scored there, and that he got tackled by a quarterback. Jerry Keeling brought him down.
Right, Jerry Keeling. Jerry Keeling brought you down. I mean, is that what you want on your resume, that I was brought down by a quarterback? Of course, you have to understand, those of us that have thrown a lot of interceptions, we take great pride in taking guys down.
Yeah, I hear you. Six teams.
He was a special guy.
He was a special guy.
God knows we miss him.
Yeah, I met him when we, you know, and you, when you guys were with the Argonauts with Leo, and we lived together for a long period of time, and we were close friends for many, many years. I don't even want to go into those stories.
You know, you don't want to.
No.
Someday you and I are going to have a long
year,
and I want to hear those stories, because what life was like with Dickie.
Yeah, Tricky was one of a kind, I'll tell you that. Six undefeated teams in the National Football League. I'm gonna say to you that Green Bay and New England are legitimate undefeated teams. I'm not saying they will stay there, but... that there's no real surprise there. Maybe Denver, you can make the argument. Atlanta, Carolina, and Cincinnati, I don't know. How many of these six are for real?
Well, you know, it's really funny. Nobody thought New England would be able to do what they've done, because they lost so many guys on the defensive side of the ball, myself included. But I think they're a faster, younger, quicker team on the defensive side of the ball than they were with Vince Wilfork and, you know, with Darrell Revis and, you know, Browner and McCourty and some of those guys. I mean, it's classic Bill Belichick coaching, I think. Just a great job of putting a team on the field. Denver is led by their defense. You know, Peyton, you can see the difference in the way Peyton throws the football today. I mean, he's been sacked a fair amount. I think the adjustment to a new system, to Gary's system, is going to take a little time, and it has. You know, you see a little bit of input from him now as far as where he wants to line up, how he wants to line up. Cincinnati, they've been knocking on the door. I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals have been knocking on the door the last 3 years.
I know.
As long as key people stay healthy, they've got a dynamic running back now. A.J. Green is what he is. Andy Dalton's been just solid all the way along. And Marvin's going to have a heck of a defensive football team. Remember, they lost Malaluga a year ago. You know, this is the thing. Right now through week four, you've got teams that are undefeated that have healthy people. Last year, for example, Carolina, Cam Newton gets hurt. As long as Cam stays healthy, I think Carolina can continue. The Carolina-Atlanta games now are going to be a lot of fun. You know, again, Julio Jones, healthy, big difference. You know, they're excited. They're playing better defense. They added some people. I'm not really surprised. I'm surprised about the Atlanta Falcons and the way they have beaten people. The comeback against the Dallas Cowboys. You know, the thrashing this past weekend. I mean, they're putting up numbers. I mean,
that's an
offensive juggernaut right now. So, you know, probably the biggest surprise would be Carolina, only because we know that, 8-8 won the division a year ago, or 7-9. And here they are past half that number that they had a year ago. So, you know, it's exciting to have six of them. And like I said, the one that's going to be really exciting is when Atlanta and Carolina start to play one another.
That ain't going to happen for a bit, though. The Atlanta Falcons' next four are Redskins, Saints, Titans, and Buccaneers. And you would agree, every one of those is winnable for Atlanta. The Falcons could be 8-0 before they face a team that really gives them a trouble.
Well, you know, they could, but... You know, we talked about, like, again, the Minnesota Vikings gave, put up a heck of a fight this weekend. Green Bay, you know, San Francisco's not a very good football team, and yet Green Bay didn't put up the typical Green Bay numbers. It's a crazy league.
You just don't
know which one of those games can jump up. You know, the Redskins going down to play the Atlanta Falcons in Atlanta. I mean, how many of those games are home games?
Right.
You know, that's another thing. How many, you know, they could trip up along the way, just like New England could trip up along the way. I mean, Green Bay, you don't know. Minnesota, I think, is going to pose a threat and probably could possibly upset some people. But, you know, the Atlanta Falcons are in a position to be able to continue to build on what they have. They have an explosive running back and Julio Jones. I mean, gosh, where do we start with the greatest receivers in the game today? A.J. Green, Julio Jones. I mean, you know, Odell Beckham is a special kind of kid. Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, you know, the Arizona Cardinals losing at home this past week. Who'd have thought that was going to happen?
I didn't. They look good enough to win.
I really didn't.
Kenny?
Joe, would you let...
It's typical NFL football, but what really, you know, what I want to see is the Argonauts keep on winning. That's the big thing to me. That's the only thing that matters to me. I could care less about anybody else.
Well, let's talk a little more NFL then, Joe. I got to talk to you about what went down in Miami today. They canned Joe Philbin. 1-3 start, lost yesterday to the Jets in London. I mean, he had the whole Richie Incognito thing going on under him, a couple of the December collapses the last couple seasons. Was he ever a fit in Miami?
You know, I think, you know, is anybody a fit? I mean, they brought in Ndamukong Suh. It's interesting. When Dan Snyder signed Albert Haynesworth and Albert did nothing, everybody got all critical over the size of the contract. I think Ndamukong Suh has the biggest contract down there in Miami. And what has he done? You know, for defensive tackles to sign $100 million contracts doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Because I don't know how they're going to influence the game at a very high level or the outcome of a game. You know, they're not Reggie Whites. They're not one-person wrecking crews. Or let me put it this way. They haven't played to a place where anybody would think they were. I think in Joe's case, it was tenuous getting started. They gave the big contract to Ryan Tannehill. They still don't have any receivers to speak of. Their offensive line was a big question mark coming in. I mean, they had pieces. You know, where do you look? The coach is the first head that goes. The general manager has to be looked upon because they're responsible for adding people. And they just don't have the people. They shouldn't have beat the Redskins in the first game. They won it on a punt return. I think that Mr. Ross made a good decision. They've got a bye now coming up. They've got 2 weeks to work under a new head coach. You know, and you listen to the head coach, who's probably, you know, Campbell's probably saying the same things that Philbin said. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to finish games. We've got to have guys play this. We need guys to do that. This is a players' league, guys. And if you don't have players that are willing to step up and lead, you've got problems.
Joe, we got about 60 seconds here, but I want to ask you about the Buffalo Bills. Based on what you've seen so far, are they for real? Is this still a work in progress? They're confusing to Buffalo fans, I'm sure. What do you think?
They're confusing to everybody, but and Rex is a out there kind of guy. But you can't applaud your team for making 17 penalties. I like guys that are aggressive. There's a difference between being aggressive and playing smart, winning football.
Yeah,
I picked the Buffalo Bills as the surprise team of the league this year. I felt like from a personnel standpoint, they can be as good as anybody. Defensively, the last 2 years, I believe they've led the league in sacks. You know, but you just can't flat be stupid.
Yeah, and that's what
That's what they have. I mean, it's hard enough to beat 11 guys on the other side. When you start sprinkling in two or three guys that make
your
mistakes
team
on your side,
yeah,
it's 9-13. You're not going to win that battle.
They're on record,
I
on
still
pace.
Like the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I do too, but they're on pace right now to shatter an NFL record for most penalties
that's
and most yards
baloney
in a season. We'll see.
That's, you know, it's week four.
I know.
You could, you know, Aaron Rodgers is you know, on pace to do this, and everybody's on pace. I mean, that's what happens when you have nothing better to talk about. Is after week four, you decide what's on pace.
Well, so far, penalties have hurt them. That much we know. Whether they
absolutely
are able to correct
is
another issue. Joe, good of you to take
that's
time for us,
question
as always, pal. Thank you.
Love being with you guys.
Joe Theismann, NFL insider and former great CFL and NFL quarterback. We've got more to come. Stick around. Primetime continues. You're listening or watching on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.